I was fishing for the history lovers because we're in a series on the life of King David and what it means to pursue the heart of God. And today, as we get into this next episode of David's life, we've seen everywhere we started out, he was a young shepherd boy, the run of the litter in his family, and how he had this special calling on his life. Because of the heart he had for God, God chose him out of a whole nation to take the lead. But it didn't happen right away because mean old King Saul was still in place. And things had to happen for that to change. We've seen how he made his way up through the military, but was on the hunt, was hunted down by Saul for years and years, and how he dealt with that, and how he pressed into God and waited on God's timing through all of that. So now we fast forward into his life, and we're going to see this next part of his life. He has now, Saul has finally has died, and David has risen to the throne. But I've got a lot to cover before we can really get to this episode. And so we've got a lot of backstory. So if you're a Phineas and Ferb fan, you know where I'm going here. It's like Dr. Duke, you know, it's like, if so, I hope you enjoy, like me and Dr. Duke and Schmertz definitely do, is a good long backstory. Okay, so here's what it has to do with. Anybody recognize this image? Okay, this is probably the most iconoclastic image of the Hebrew nation, of the Israelites, going all the way back to Moses. And so, but we're going to talk a little bit about this. But I've got a guest lecturer to make it a little bit more fun and entertaining. And so this is from a few years ago, but a special, here we go, Professor Henry Jones. Okay.
How can this movie smell like a thousand flowers and feel like a thousand thread? Introducing Unstoppable Fabric Conditioner by Algae for a captivating scent with luxury.
You try so hard, you get everything queued up, and you just never know where YouTube's going to take you. Okay, ready? Here we go.
Really? There's a bit of falling out of the crib. Dr. Jones, you must understand that this is all strictly confidential.
I understand.
Yesterday afternoon, our European sections intercepted a German communique sent from Cairo to Berlin.
Now, you see, over the last 7 years, the Nazis have had teams of archaeologists running around the world looking for all kinds of religious artifacts. Hitler said nothing on the subject. He's crazy. He's obsessed with the occult. And right now, apparently, there's some kind of German archaeological dig going on in the desert outside of Cairo.
We've got some information here, but we can't make anything out of it, and maybe you can. Tanks development proceeding. Choir headpiece. Staff of Ra. Abner Ravenwood, U.S.
Nazis have discovered tanks.
So what does that mean to you, chemist?
Well, City of Tanis is one of the possible resting places of the Lost Ark.
The Lost Ark?
Yeah, the Ark and the Covenant, the chest the Hebrews used to carry around the Ten Commandments.
But what Ten Commandments? Still about the Ten Commandments?
Yes, the actual Ten Commandments. The original stone tablets that Moses brought down from Mount Horeb and smashed, if you believe in that sort of thing.
Did you guys ever go to Sunday school?
Well, look. The Hebrews took the broken pieces and put them in the Ark, and they settled in Canaan. They put the Ark in a place called the Temple of Solomon,
Jerusalem,
where it stayed for many years, until all of a sudden, whoosh, it's gone.
Where?
Well, nobody knows where or when.
However, an Egyptian pharaoh,
Shisha,
yes, invaded the city of Jerusalem about 980 B.C. He may have taken the artifact to the city of Tanis and hidden it in a secret chamber called the Well of Solomon.
Secret chamber.
However, about a year after the pharaoh had returned to Egypt, the city of Tanis was consumed by the desert, and the sandstorm which lasted a whole year, wiped clean by the wolf.
So, okay, so a little introduction. If you're not too familiar with the Ark of the Covenant, and here Indiana Jones, what was fascinating. This is one of my all-time favorite movies. I remember when I was in high school, don't tell my Uncle George this, but I cut school that day, on opening day, to go see Raiders of the Lost Ark. And so, my uncle was...
You would have gotten attention.
I probably would have, and I probably should have, but it was worth it. So, that was true, and that's what this movie is so fascinating. I mean, Hitler was after all that stuff. The Spear of Destiny, which has a long legend around it, the spear that pierced Christ while he was on the cross, that's a real life thing. And the Ark of the Covenant. And because of the legendary power that it supposedly possessed for any nation or army that had it in its possession. And the stories that surround the life of David talk about all this. And so I want to go back. There's a couple things to correct from that clip, first of all. And so Moses didn't put broken pieces back in. God actually instructed Moses to remake some new tablets after he smashed them when he came back down from the mountain and was upset with the people for a while. He was gone with God for that time. They had already erected a new idol to worship, and he lost his temper and smashed the tablets. Well, God had to make some new ones, and those went into the ark. Okay, so bonus time. What were the other two idols that rested in the Ark of the Covenant, that came to be placed in the Ark of the Covenant? Not going to give those away. Got to work a little bit. Email me this week, and you get a free lunch. All right? I'll take you out to lunch if you care that much that you'll probably just going to go on Google, huh? All right. Even if you just go on Google, I'll be impressed. What were all the items that were in the Ark of the Covenant? And so it wasn't just the tablets with the Ten Commandments. There's a couple other items in there too that Spielberg missed when he made the movie. But that was real. Hitler actually put a lot of resources into that. That's why it's such a fascinating story. But the Lost Ark, whatever happened to it? And it has such an incredible, amazing history. But I want to take you back, and let's go all the way back to Exodus in the beginning, and let's learn about what this ark is. And so we're prepared when it intersects into the life and reign of King David in this next episode in David's life. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Have the people of Israel build me a holy sanctuary so I can live among them. You must build me this tabernacle and its furnishings exactly according to the pattern I will show you." And so this is after God led the Israelites out of slavery from Egypt and they're wandering in the desert. And God said, "Look, I want you to know and to feel in a very real way that I am present among you. And so I want you to build this portable home for me. And as you move, I move with you." And this is a real life replication of what the tabernacle, this tent in the wilderness, would have looked like. And all of a sudden it was fold up, portable, roll up, and it moved with the Israelites as they moved through the desert. And inside, in the very, you've got the altar here where the sacrifices were made by the priests before they would enter. They would make these sacrifices on behalf of the people, and then they would wash up in the wash basin here, and then they would go through the curtain. This tent was divided into two rooms, the holy place, and then the back room was the holy of holies. And only the high priest could enter that room, in the back third of the tent. Here's an artist's rendering. Here you would come in, and you'd have the candles on the left, and the bread on the right, and another little altar before you went into, and again, only the high priest could go into that back area where the Ark of the Covenant rested. And this was an incredibly special place. And in fact, even if the high priest hadn't done everything right and prepared, I mean, he could die from being exposed to the presence of God and not having cleansed himself right and gone through all the prayers and purification rituals. And so that nobody else had to ever go in there, and in case he did drop dead, they would tie a rope onto him And so all you had to do is do this. And so that became the tradition was, you know, in case you heard a thump, you know, well, who's going to go get him? I'm not going in there. You know, so you at least drag the guy out. And so, but I want to read you through some detail so you can see, you know, and don't worry, you're not going to be tested on this. But this is how God, and this is all kind of leading up to a special crescendo at the end of this passage that will help you really see how important this was, not only to David, but to the whole nation. We'll have the people make an ark of acacia wood. So it's made out of wood, a sacred chest with these dimensions. Overlay it inside and outside with pure gold. So it's wood on the inside, but it had a gold covering. And run a molding of gold all around it. Cast four gold rings. Attach them to 4 feet, two rings on each side. Make poles from wood. Overlay those with gold. Insert the poles into the rings at the sides of the ark to carry it. These carrying poles must stay inside the rings. Never remove them. When the ark is finished, place it inside the stone tablets inscribed with the terms of the covenant which I will give to you. Then make the ark's cover. The place of atonement from pure gold. So the lid, the cap on the lid, the covering was pure gold inside and out. Then make two cherubim, two angels from hammered gold and place them on the two ends of the atonement cover. Mold the cherubim on each end of the cover, making it all of one piece of gold. Solid gold. The cherubim will face each other and look down on the atonement cover. With their wings spread above it, they will protect it. Place inside the ark the stone tablets inscribed with the terms of the covenant, which I will give to you. Then put the atonement cover on top of the ark. And this is what was so incredibly special and how God chose to meet His people in such a unique way. I will meet you there and talk to you from above the atonement cover between the gold cherubim that hover over the ark of the covenant. From there, I will give you my commands for the people of Israel. And so even though Moses wasn't the high priest, he was the one exception. His brother Aaron was the first high priest. But this is where Moses would go and confer with God. And this is where God would personally speak to him. And where God was always in a very physical way, was manifested spiritually, but in that place. Over the ark. I mean, this is why that famous line from Professor Belloc, you know, Indiana Jones's arch rival. Jones, do you realize what the ark is? It's a transmitter. It's a radio for speaking to God. That's where that line comes from. Because that's what was believed. That whoever possessed this treasure chest had a direct line to God. Unfortunately, what we see in the Bible and what we also see in the movie, you can't manipulate God and you can't just use the chest to call on the voice of God. In fact, you would get into a lot of trouble if you did. And so let me just go over a quick little review here. Only the high priest could enter the Holy of Holies. Now, the ark had a long history of being moved around in a lot of places. But now, before David came about, earlier in Israel's history, during the time that Saul was reigning, and they were fighting back and forth with the Philistines. Remember, Goliath came from the army of the Philistines. The ark was captured. And that is when that broke Israel's heart, when the Philistine army now possessed their holiest treasure, their closest connection with God Himself. And so the Philistines now thought, much like Hitler hoped, that they were now going to be in this incredible place of power. But all it brought was bad news. They put it in the middle of their temple, and the next day, their own God statue had fallen to the floor. They kind of freaked out, said, okay, random coincidence. They propped it back up. The next morning, same thing. Smashed, this time, to the floor. So they started to freak out a little bit. But then what really got them was all of a sudden people started growing these crazy tumors. Rats would infest the land. The people summoned the Philistine rulers again and begged them, please send the ark of the God of Israel back to its own country or it will kill us. For the deadly plague from God has already begun and great fear was sweeping across the town. And so the ark started going from different Philistine village to different village. And everyone's all, don't send it here. Just can't we just get rid of it? And they finally called all their priests together and they came up with a plan. And they said, all right, get a couple cows, hook it up to it, put it on a cart, slap those guys on the rear. And if it takes off to an Israelite town, we'll know that God was, you know, unhappy and that's where he wants it. If it ends up in one of our towns, then this is just a weird random coincidence. Actually, that's exactly what they said. But lo and behold, these two cattle leading this cart went on a straight line to a little remote village in Israel where it just rested for decades. And no one knew where the ark. The Philistines were just glad to get rid of it. But it's still, even though it's in Israel, Saul never paid any attention to it. And it just kind of hung out, all but forgotten, in this little remote town in Israel. But the people were still brokenhearted, not knowing where, you know, thinking, okay, we've, you know, the presence of God has left us. Because to them, it was symbolized very strongly through wherever the ark was. So that's where we pick things up in the story of David. But I hope that backstory helps you appreciate this history that we're getting into. Because once David took the throne, he had two priorities in mind. First one was to get Jerusalem back. This was another thing that had happened in their fights against these battles against these other nations. Is their capital city had been taken. And so Jerusalem had fallen to an outside force. And so one of the first things David does is muster troops to retake Jerusalem and get that back under Israel's control. And then the next item on his to-do list was to go find that ark, because the rumor had gotten around that it was in this little village back in Israel. So David again brought together all the able young men of Israel, 30,000. He and all his men went to Bala in Judah to bring up from there the ark of God. They set the ark on a new cart and brought it from the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. Uzzah and Ahio, sons of Abinadab, were guiding the new cart with the ark of God on it, and Ahio was walking in front of it. When they came to the threshing floor of Nacon, Uzzah innocently reached out and took hold of the ark of God because the oxen stumbled. Didn't read the manual to taking care of the ark of God. The Lord's anger burned against Uzzah because of his irreverent act. Therefore, God struck him down and he died right there besides the ark of God. This was not something you played around with. And so this is not something, this is not just any little treasure chest. I mean, this is surrounded by the power of God. And so that freaked everybody out, freaked out David. He was afraid of the Lord that day and took a step back in his plan and said, how can the ark of God ever come to me? He was not willing to take the ark of the Lord to be with him in the city of David. Instead, he took it to another house in another little town, and the ark of the Lord remained in the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite for 3 months. And then reports started coming in, hey, things are going good for Obed. You know, in fact, he's been really blessed having this in this possession. Okay, it's not something to be scared of. God's on our side, so maybe we should have paid a little more intent. You know, we've got to go back to Moses' stories, because remember, we're 500 years later from the times of Moses. Maybe we ought to dig in and learn how to have some respect for God's ark, and there's a special way to take care of it. So David was told, the Lord has blessed the household and everything he has because of the Ark of God. So David got his courage back up, went to bring up the Ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. So Jerusalem's nickname is the city of David. So they're on their way finally to Jerusalem, finally with the Ark of God. Okay, so this is a big deal. This is game 7 has been won. The ticker tape is flying in the streets. This is the big parade entering the city. And so, in fact, the whole nation is anticipating this, and David himself is leading the parade and wearing a linen ephod, which was what only the priests wore. And so, again, so David kind of discarded his kingly raiment and put on what the priests would wear. Again, now he's learning more about how to treat the ark. And he was dancing before the Lord with all his might, while he and all Israel were bringing up the ark of the Lord with shouts and the sounds of trumpets. As the ark of the Lord was entering the city of David, Michal, David's wife, that he had been given her hand by King Saul years ago, Michal, daughter of Saul, watched from a window. And when she saw King David just losing it, just going nuts, because finally, we've got the ark back. We've got the symbol of God's very presence back with us. And he was elated. And he just lost his mind in a good way. He was just leaping and dancing before the Lord, but it drove her nuts. She was totally embarrassed. She despised in her heart the way he acted so beneath himself. What king would act like that? A proper king would keep his cool. But David's heart, filled with joy and excitement over this incredible blessing of having the ark back, was just going crazy. But to her, I mean, he had just gone Patrick Swayze, you know, and just, I mean, this was just inappropriate, not cool for the king to act. When David returned home to bless his household, Michal, daughter of Saul, came out to meet him and just scolded him. How the king of Israel has distinguished himself today, going around half naked in full view of slave girls of his servants as any vulgar fellow would, and just chides him as if he'd just gone Chippendales on everybody. And now, this passage gets a little bit misinterpreted. And if you've ever seen Richard Gere did a good King David version? If you ever saw that movie, but a lot of King David movies, I mean, he's basically in a loincloth, you know, dancing before the Lord. But that isn't what a linen ephod was. It was just a light robe that the priest would wear. But again, the king would wear something much more substantial. But here's what got David in a little trouble with his wife, is just in Middle Eastern culture, let alone being the king, it just was not proper to even show a little knee. You know, let alone flying around, leaping and dancing, what that might reveal. And so that's what got her upset. And so that he would just let his emotions go and not hold it in, you know, in a proper kingly way that's appropriate for royalty. He was out there, again, just letting his emotions go. And remember, David, he was a musician. He was a songwriter. He was a dancer. He loved to move, and that's how he celebrated. And he didn't care. He told her, "It was before the Lord who chose me, by the way, rather than your dad or anyone from his house, when he appointed me ruler over the Lord's people. So I will celebrate before the Lord." And so what I love about this story, but it helps us to know what that, to have a little emotional attachment to that ark, to help it make sense why David would act this way and how full of joy and celebration he was. But what I love about the story is he let himself go. And he wasn't worried about what anybody else was going to think. And he wasn't worried about how other people would or should react in a situation. This is how he worshipped. This is how he wanted to celebrate God. This was his style. And that is what worked for his relationship with God. And God felt celebrated because here's somebody worshiping him with a whole heart, with a true heart, and not trying to just fit in or do the right thing or, you know, fit whatever structure was around them. But that obviously upset some people, but David didn't care. So I'm gonna worship. And this is how it feels right for me to worship, so I'm just gonna let it fly. So it makes me want to ask a question. How can me and you worship? Now think about that a little bit. Is how do you worship? Because I think a lot of times, you know, we kind of when we refer to worship, we mainly think about musical work, you know, singing in church. That's just one very thin slice of the worship pie. I mean, worship encompasses our whole lives. That's what I want to dive into here. First, let's look at what the word worship means in our language. The feeling or expression of reverence and adoration for an object, a person, or a deity. But here's where the word comes from, and I find this really fascinating. It really helps me understand what it means to really worship and find a way that makes sense for me to worship. It comes from the word worth. It's an old English word that kind of got contracted over time called worthship. And so when you think of that and you bring in the meaning of the word worth, the level at which someone or something deserves to be valued or rated, where would you value or rate the God of the universe in your life? But everybody here, if we spent 3 minutes looking through your garage, your home, your checkbook, it'd be really easy to figure out what we all worship. Worship is simply a value statement. It's what we value. It's what we put value into. This combination, this of worth, of worthship, of worship. And I love the way the Apostle Paul simplifies it for us in the New Testament. And he kind of brings this idea together and shows us that we can live in a way that shows value to God in every part of our day. In Romans 12, he says, "And so, brothers and sisters, I plead with you, give your bodies to God because of all He has done for you. Let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind He will find acceptable. This is the true way to worship Him." And at first, you know, you read that verse and you're like, what? Give my body to God as a living sacrifice? At first it's like, is that, you know, what do? Hurl myself into the fire? And it's like, no, he's not talking about physical sacrifice. In fact, it's a living sacrifice. Put your body into motion. And in the New Testament, when they use the word body, they meant all of you. Not just your arms and legs, but your mind, your talents, your time, your personality, your resources. Everything that you influence had to do with your soma, your body. Here's another a paraphrase of that verse from Eugene Peterson's version, The Message. So here's what I want you to do. God helping you. Take your everyday, ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. So maybe you're not a dancer or a singer. I'm not. I like to, you know, when we're, I love the songs that we sing in our church. And I just want so bad sometimes to just belt them out, but I'm just going to wait till I'm alone in my car to really do that, just because I don't want to annoy you guys. So music's not my, you know, singing's not my talent, and I think pretty safe to say you're not going to see me bust out in dancing anytime soon around church. But just because that's not the way that I'm drawn to worship. Doesn't mean I can't worship. I've got a whole walking around 12, 18 hour day that I can give myself to worshiping God. And so here's what I want to do is I want to really challenge us all to think through our normal week. Okay? So Sunday through Saturday. What does your everyday normal week look like? And how can you fill it with, instead of just doing your own thing and kind of putting all that value into things that maybe aren't super important in the whole big picture of everything, how can we express worship all through a week in a way that's going to bring value, lasting value into the world because of our relationship with God? So here's 7 ideas, one for each day of the week. 7 ways that we can tune in, we can offer ourselves, offer our bodies in a life of worship. Because worshiping God isn't just here on a Sunday morning. Here, this is just where we come together and we kind of get reminded, we get encouraged, we get inspired to worship. But it's the rest of the week that's really going to make a dent in the world around us. How can you use your mind? God has gifted so many of you with these incredible minds, that solve problems, that organize, that put so much together. But so many times we're simply just using those and adding value to what the world wants us to do with that. But how can you do that for God's kingdom and make an influence in that way? How can you use your hands? How can you speak a word of encouragement? How can you use your voice to express value, to express worship in your week? Your money, your stuff, your home, your friends. So I just want your wheels to be, let's kind of talk through a few of these, but I want your wheels to be turning. Now, I'm looking forward to this mission trip because 24 friends are coming together, and so often it can feel lonely. What can I do by myself? But to come together with a group of people and set a week aside to do nothing but serve others is just an incredible picture of worship. So how can we worship as a group? But then how can I use my home to worship? Yes, several of you have opened up your homes to host various things for our church family. And when you do that, or when you simply open up your home to serve anyone and to bring God's love and hospitality into their lives, that's an act of worship. You're saying what God wants, what He's after, is so valuable to you that you look around and go, okay, what do I have to give to Him? Well, I've got this home that I can offer. I've got this stuff that I can offer. Fill in the blanks. There, I was met a dad of a friend of one of my kids recently, who took a bunch of kids out on the Delta boating, and I was getting to talk to this guy, and I was so impressed with how he was just going over his last month and the month coming up, and all this time he was going to spend on his boat. But it was all for other people. I mean, here he's taking out this group of kids that had never, several of them had never been, tubing or out on a boat before, and they were just ecstatic to get to go do this. And then, he was talking about the church groups at his church that he was planning on doing this, and other friends and neighbors, and he was just so thrilled to be able to use this resource that he had, this boat, to bring people together and enjoy nature and recreation in just a fun way. But it just was very clear. It was not about him. He wasn't going to have a good time. He was just driving around for a bunch of loud teenagers that day. You know, he didn't have anything coming back to him, but he was, you know, simply wanting to provide a good time with something that he had. And it was really, really inspiring. It made me think, okay, what, look around. What's in my inventory? How can I use that to value others? How can I use my money? How can I use my hands? How can I simply be God's hands to help someone? Those of you that have helped out, whether it's at Shelter Inc. with some of the homeless preparation stuff we've done in the past before, gone to Habitat for Humanity, and just simply using your hands. And we might be fumbling over things, but we got somebody, showing us, what to do and lining us out. But so many of you have such skilled hands that you can put to use to help those in this world. When you do that, you are worshiping. You're offering your bodies as a living sacrifice. That is your true worship. That is what worship is all about. It is much more than singing and dancing, which is great. But we all have an opportunity to bring value into the world. Show that we believe God's work, His heart, His will, His desires for those around us is more important and more valuable than what I'd like to do or get or have for myself. And that's what worship is all about. And it's going to look different. This week it's going to look much different for all of us. In that day before the ark, David looked very different than anyone else. And he certainly didn't look like a king that day. He looked like a giddy schoolboy whose favorite team had just won it all. But that's how he expressed his heart. And it's just the story we commemorate centuries and centuries later. But how can you express your heart throughout your normal, ordinary, everyday? God has given you so much. How can we all give it back? We don't have to wait till next Sunday. In fact, our life of worship, our week of worship begins as soon as we leave here tonight. We're going to be valuing something. Most of the time, it's the easiest thing to value ourselves. How can we push that value out into the world and say, I value God's work more than anything else? That's what worship is all about. Heavenly Father, we do. We want to worship You. You're the one that should come first when we're budgeting, when we're scheduling, when we're purchasing, when we're planning, just when we're living. So Lord, show us what a life of worship can be like. And Lord, fill up our hearts. Let us see how Your presence in our lives is what gives us ultimate joy. And for David, how having that ark that symbolized Your presence gave him such great joy. Lord, let us take that joy and spread it around every day this week in just little things, through our voices, through our hands, through our homes. Lord, all these ways that we can worship You in real and true ways. Lord, let that happen in our week this week. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, as Keith leads us in some musical worship, why don't we stand, and I just want to remind you, like we do every week, that you're invited to the Lord's table to feel His presence in a unique way, to remember His love, His sacrifice, His gift to each of us through what He did on the cross. And so, if there's anybody here that feeling like you just want to pray, I would love to pray with you in the back of the room. Let's see.